Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I am delighted to be here. And you?
Yeah, me as well. It's recording again after a bit of a summer hiatus.
Oh, you know how that works. It's nice to get a bit of summer vacation in. We don't get much in the way of summer up here in Nova Scotia.
No, it's true. And then they close the woods on you, so you can't even do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We won't try to take people into the nuances of local news and forest fires and things of the sort. But I am really excited for today's conversation and getting into the nuances of that, because I think the path that we're talking about today is one that is a common challenge for manufacturers. It's one that as manufacturers grow and mature, it's kind of this is something that they often go through. And I'm really excited to see to get the advice and insights from today's guest. I just think our listeners will get a lot of benefit out of it.
Yeah, I think so too. So joining us today is Tom Greensall. Tom is the head of marketing at PAC BGR. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Tom.
Thanks, both. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Well, Tom, it's wonderful to have you on the show. I've got to say, you dropped that bombshell on us just as we were starting, that you're into auto racing. And so we're going to resist the urge to just talk about cars the entire show. which would be certainly the predisposition of Jeff and probably myself as well. Like, marketing, not nearly as interesting. Let's talk about racing cars now.
Maybe we can make it a LinkedIn post of what I learned about marketing from racing cars.
There you go. Oh, man, I hate LinkedIn for stuff like that. You know, it's what makes LinkedIn as a platform ultra annoying, you know? It's not just a little annoying, it's ultra annoying. Anyway, nevertheless, we're not getting into that, Tom. What we are going to get into today, we'll get into after we introduce our listeners to PAC BGR and tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So I'm actually based in London, although PAC BGR is based in Ohio and operates in the UK. So I'm in a unique position of kind of being in a different place to where I'm working. But as you guys mentioned, I'm head of marketing at BGR, and I'm coming from a tech startup background. So my previous job was at an AI startup. Before that, I was at a tech scale-up. So it's a very different industry, and yeah, it's been a lot of learning for me, but also I've been able to bring a lot of kind of unique perspectives over from the tech world across to the packaging and supply world, which has been awesome.
Really cool. Well, what does PAC BGR do? Just let us know a little bit more about the firm, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So BGR is a packaging distributor, but we like to think we're a lot more than that. We call ourselves a packaging experts, and we're trying to bring control to the whole supply chain. So it's not just about ordering boxes or ordering tape or machines to kind of do that. It's looking at your whole supply chain and trying to bring efficiencies across that whole package. So, we're shifting from just doing lots of product sales into doing now program sales. We're doing multi-year big contracts that are saving our customers, you know, multiple millions of dollars a year by looking at it holistically across the whole supply chain.
Did this change to more kind of program-oriented selling kind of correspond with your arrival at BGR?
It came in just before I arrived, but I think they started looking at marketing as kind of a bigger function because of that shift, and it's a different way to go to market. It's you're selling to different personas. So, you know, the way that we've been going to market for the last 50 years has been extremely successful, but as we shift the strategy, we need to be looking at doing things slightly differently.
Tom, I want to assure you that as I continue to talk about the firm, I'll try not to talk about it through the lens of the URL. I'll just use BGR rather than prefacing it with the PAC, as I've been doing. The URL has just been stuck in my head, which I suppose is good from a URL perspective.
Means something is working, absolutely.
Exactly. Jeff was starting to knock on the door of that, the change in the sales process and your approach and how you're, it changed basically in the go-to-market motion for BGR. And I think it's a common challenge for manufacturers is that most manufacturers start out as very sales-centric organizations. Sales is almost always the muscle, if you will, that gets developed first. And marketing comes next. And as a result, it often starts as a bit of a support function to sales. I guess the story that we're talking about here is really about transforming that into a more modern marketing function. And it sounds like that transformation was at least somewhat already underway as you joined. But I guess take us through that. And I'd be curious kind of where the firm was when you joined and kind of what were your first next steps, if you would.
Yeah, so I'd actually been doing some freelance work for the company for about 2 years before I joined full-time, just supporting doing kind of basic email marketing and CRM setup and that kind of thing. So I knew where they were, and we're still very much a sales-led organization. You know, marketing is still the little brother in terms of the, you know, revenue and growth model for BGR, but we're trying to move away from being purely branding and sales enablement, so which is what it was when I came, to being a real driver of growth. So, you know, we've redone our website from the ground up this year, which was a really interesting project. And actually, when I was looking at our competitors and other people in the industry, what really struck me is everyone was doing what we were doing, which was just putting information on the website. And it was very educational. You learned a lot, but there was no real purpose to any of the pages. Yeah, you'd go on a website and you'd think, what's the marketer trying to do here? What is their goal for this web page? And there was no kind of structure or flow. And so that's what we've brought to our website now, is we've tried to make it much more engaging. We've tried to make it, you know, when you come to this page, we want you to buy this product. When you come to this page, we want you to get interested in this program or learn about this program. And that's what we've gone. We've tried to move away from just being educational and just kind of putting information out there and supporting sales, to being a revenue driver in our own right.
You talk about the notion of supporting sales, and I think, you know, as a lot of marketing departments are being stood up, you know, within an organization that maybe wasn't going, you know, to market as a kind of marketing-led organization, you know, often the marketing department's role is to produce content and documents and presentations and brochures and all of those things. The sales has the tools that they need when they're going out there. How have you approached kind of changing their perspective and flipping that a little bit so that you can do more with, you know, very few people?
Yeah, it's a difficult challenge. And, you know, when I came in, you know, I kind of met with the sales leaders and kind of the other leaders in the business and said very clearly, this is what marketing is going to be going forward. This is what our role is. This is what our goals are. These are what my targets are. And if there's something outside those targets, that's not my responsibility. And they were very understanding of that. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to create collateral for the sales team or we're not going to create presentations for them. But they can't now just come to and say, I have a sales meeting on Friday, build a presentation for me. You know, there has to be a broader strategic goal for the support that they're looking for. A one-off sales meeting, unless it's with a massive client that's going to really change, you know, shift the needle, that's not what we're here for. You know, you're a salesperson. We have templates. We have, you know, documents that you can edit within our guidelines. You can go in and create that yourself. So that was the first point. And then the second point was telling them what we're going to be doing and how that would still be helping them in other ways. So, for example, the website, we're now generating a lot more leads for our website than we ever were previously. That's great for the sales team because now they're not having to knock on doors. They're getting leads coming to them. We've launched some outbound advertising campaigns. So again, for our e-com team, all of a sudden now we're getting more people coming through to the website and it's people that know what they're looking for. So it was really twofold. It was being very clear about what marketing is and isn't, and two, what that new look will do to kind of to help them in their life.
What was the response like as they started to kind of see more performance-oriented deliverables from marketing as opposed to documents and slideshows?
I think there's still a little bit where they're trying to understand what we are and what we're doing. That, you know, a lot of what we've been doing, I've been at the business for less than a year, so a lot of what we've been doing has been building the infrastructure and it's been behind the scenes. So we're just now, the last couple of months, starting to see some really good performance. So there's been a little bit of kind of, you know, what are they doing? What's the benefit? What's going on? But as they're seeing it now there is some excitement and understanding of kind of the direction that we're going in.
That's a really interesting point in this evolution, because that's so often the case, is this type of shift is greeted initially with a lot of skepticism, or just like, okay, you know, like whatever those
make my own PowerPoints.
Well, it's just whatever those marketing people are on about. But like, it's a little bit of the marketing is, sales are from Venus and marketing from Mars or the vice versa or something. It kind of is where it often starts out. And that's why I like the idea that one of the early initiatives was the rebuild of the site and kind of reimagining how that performs. Because to your point, it can impact sales pretty quickly as they start to find themselves working more inbound leads that already have a level of buying intent versus prospecting hard. And then I think the other side of that is the website is often a sales assist tool for a direct sales organization. So they start to see the benefit of prospects going to the site and being impressed. Is that starting to be the story now as the new site is taking hold? And I'd be curious if I can extend my question. I would be curious to know what kind of shift you are seeing right now in terms of working inbound versus prospecting leads, if there's any kind of numbers we can put to that. But I appreciate that's a pretty specific question.
Yeah. So on the first part of that question, absolutely. And what's interesting is it's not just helping the sales team, it's actually educating them a little bit. So 7 months ago, they'd be coming to marketing saying, hey, I've got a customer who's in this industry. Have we got a flyer for them? Have we got a one pager for them? But now that we've rebuilt our website, and like I said, we're very purposeful about this section of the website, this is the goal, this section of the website, this is the goal. They're now starting to learn that actually they don't need a flyer. They can just direct their prospects to a certain part of the website, and the messaging is already there for them. So they're no longer looking for purpose-built material for a prospect. They're directing them to our new website, which is fantastic. In terms of the numbers that we've been seeing, I haven't got the exact numbers in front of me. I know a couple of months ago we'd seen about 139, 140% increase in new contacts through the website, which is fantastic. It's pretty serious increase. What that's led to down the line, I don't have that numbers in front of me. But also because we've been doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, we're doing a lot of SEO work, we're experimenting with improving our GEO performance. We think that the numbers that we're getting in are actually more targeted rather than just someone stumbling across. You know, what we found in the past, we had a lot of small businesses coming in, which is fantastic, but they were doing a $500, $1,500 purchase. And those customers are important, but they're not our target audience. We want to be targeting the people that are doing $500,000 a year in impacting spend. And we're now starting to see that shift where the right people are coming to the site.
Was the e-commerce platform a specific play to appease those smaller businesses that were looking for the $500 or $1,500 things so you could keep the focus of the sales team on the, you know, $500,000 a year ICP?
Yes, so that conversation shifts to the business strategy as much as just the marketing strategy. Previously at BGR, any salesperson could and would sell to anyone. So you might have your most senior salesperson knocking on the door of a mom and pop shop and doing $500 in sales, and then your most junior salesperson trying to sell one of our programs to a multi-million dollar business. And that didn't really make sense. We're now trying to be a little bit more segmented. We've created messaging for different types of businesses. And absolutely, the e-com store is for those smaller customers where they can still go and get the package they need, but they don't need sales support for that. And so now the sales reps can be more focused on who they're going after. And these programs that I mentioned, we have programs for different size of businesses, as well as the different goals for them. So we are trying to break down the business into being more focused, not just in terms of messaging, but in terms of who is doing what and who is focusing on what prospects.
That's really exciting. I mean, it's easy to look in the crystal ball and imagine a year from now or 2 years from now, looking at the improvement in close rates and the improvement in average deal size combined. And then when you combine that with the enhanced intent and dramatic increase in contact and lead flow, you can just imagine, it just sounds like a rocket ship at this point. That's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, and BGR is such a good business and it has such great products, and the leadership there is so strong that we had a lot of good stuff to work with. So although the marketing function wasn't stood up, as a business, everything was there that needed to succeed. So we did have a really good, you know, starting point. We've got great leadership. So it's an exciting time to be kind of, you know, building it from the ground up.
Yeah, I mean, that's an important point because, of course, good marketing to a bad product or bad service just means that more people find out how bad it is faster. and then you just fail faster.
Yeah, you got to have the fundamentals in place first.
Yeah, it's nice to, like a house remodel. It's nice to be starting with good bones, you know.
Exactly. And the other thing I'd mention is, you know, marketing doesn't happen overnight. So, you know, it's not just kind of put a LinkedIn post out there and go LinkedIn and go viral and all of a sudden, you know, everything works. It takes time to build that infrastructure up. So you need leadership that are going to have that patience and are going to understand that you've got to do the hard work before you start seeing the result. That doesn't mean you can't get quick results, you can't get quick wins, but the overall kind of strategic wins, that's going to take a little bit longer. And as long as your leadership understand that, then you can be a bit more patient and do things properly.
What's the trajectory of the marketing team itself, like your HR complement? I think you have mentioned 2.5 resources, full-time resources currently.
Yeah.
How has that grown since you've been there in the last year? And what are the kind of skill sets and scale of that team that you're going to see in the future?
Yeah, so it's 2.5 people, including me. We have a freelancer who is kind of with us most of the week, but not the full-time. We've recently brought on one other freelancer who's a specialist in digital advertising, because that wasn't the skills that we had in-house. But we don't anticipate that growing. So you know, it's 40-ish sales reps versus 2.5 marketing. It's very misbalanced or unbalanced, but we're trying to find ways of scaling what we do. So we're really leaning into AI as a way of not doing the work for us, but a way of making us more productive as marketers. We're trying to build repeatable processes. And I think the freelance model is a model we'll go with. Rather than having a full-time hire, we'll be looking for specialists with skill sets that we need, and we'll be using them for, you know, a certain period of time. And then we'll be kind of scaling back their enrollment and then maybe shifting our focus. And I think that is the way that a lot of marketing teams will go over the next 5 years, you know, with the influx of freelance marketers, with the growth of AI and AI performance. There's no need to have a full-time hire, which takes a lot of your budget. You can be a little bit more, you know, working at a smaller size and more efficiently.
How have the, I mean, it's obviously still early days in the realm of AI and making the marketing function more efficient and effective via that technology. Has that so far, would you say it's met your expectation? You've been able to achieve the level of efficiency and effectiveness gains that you would have hoped as you started down that path? Or are you finding it's the benefits are lagging a bit? I'd be curious.
I think what we're finding is the short-term gain is actually negative. So you spend a lot of time learning the skill or learning the certain AI model, and you don't quite get the results you want. But once you invested a bit of time in it and you understand how it works and you've maybe trained it on your own data, then all of a sudden the results shoot up. And you know, you have to go through that pain of learning the model. And sometimes it's not the right model, and it's, you know, you've invested a lot of time that maybe you don't get back. But overall, you know, we now use it to create video assets from photos, which saves a lot of time and a lot of money of getting you know, someone in to do the videos themselves. We have writing GPTs, so we've trained the GPTs on our brand, on our messaging, on our writing style, and it now does a pretty good job of creating content to 90-95% of what we need, and we just need to tweak it. You know, we've got a custom GPT that looks at our SEO and our geo performance. So rather than, you know, me having to go into SEMrush and going through the millions of dashboards on there, I can just go in and get a quick report. So yeah, you have to think about it, you know, you have to learn how to use it, and you have to use it properly. I think a good way of looking at it is it's like a very, very intelligent intern that's got skill sets of someone that's very, very senior. If you give it the right instructions and you give it the right training, it will do really good work. If you try and cut corners and don't give it the right inputs, you're going to get really bad outputs.
I think that's really helpful guidance, as you know, I think a lot of marketers find themselves being pressured by the C-Speed, et cetera, to leverage AI in order to find efficiencies. It's nice to set some expectations around what that journey is going to look like. And I appreciate you mentioning that. Yeah, you got to go through a little bit of pain first before you start to see some of the benefits.
Yeah, it's not a magic button, but it is really powerful when it's used properly.
One of the things I find often in this type of evolution of the marketing function is that there's some low-hanging fruit initially just in building a more proper digital foundation and getting some of those foundational elements in place that help capture kind of high buying intent, rich inbound demand. Like every kind of category has some of that out there, like that low-hanging fruit to pluck. But then after that digital foundation's been set up and the conversion focus has been implemented and maybe a proper paid search program, then that low-hanging fruit of the inbound high buying intent leads kind of starts to dry up a little bit. I mean, it's not an infinite pool of them. And then you have to shift to how you think about driving awareness. And I'm going somewhere with this, and that it's for a sales-focused organization and for sales-focused manufacturers, sometimes I think the budgets required to truly drive brand awareness are, frankly, they're not interested in spending that kind of money. Is any of that aligning with your reality? And if so, because I'm guessing it is, how are you navigating that or thinking about it? Truly, how are you thinking about driving net new brand awareness in a previously very and currently very sales focused organization?
Yeah, it's a really good point, and I agree that kind of marketing budgets, probably not just in this industry, but in general, leadership don't understand the investment that's required to get the proper results. We're currently at that point where we're just kind of shifting at the moment. So we've got our product advertising stood up and running and seeing some good results. Like I said, we've got a new website. So those low hanging fruit, we're kind of at the point where, we've got everything we need running to achieve that. And now we're starting to shift our focus to, okay, how do we look at this more full funnel? How do we bring in new customers? And for me, that is looking at these program type deals, which is, it's new to the industry. So it's not just introducing a new customer or a new company for the prospect, it's introducing a whole new concept and a whole new way of looking at supply chains. And it's looking at new markets. And we're pretty big in the markets that we operate in. And our next phase is, let's move into new markets, particularly geographical markets. So the way that I'm looking at it is, we've got some really good results. We've got those low hanging fruits. And so I can take that to leadership and say, here's the results we've got. Our ROAS has been fantastic. But if we want to go to the next stage, we're going to need bigger budget. And so it's kind of building on the previous results. But again, it comes back to, I mentioned you need patience from leadership. It comes back to the educating them as well. So they need to understand that the next stage is not going to be quite as quick results. It's going to take a little bit longer. And if you can try and set some, goals along the way. So if you look at that full funnel, the first bit is awareness. How many people are now following us on LinkedIn? How many people have gone to our website because they saw an ad, even if they didn't convert? That's fine. Then you've got interest. How many people are now spending more time on the website or going to multiple pages? How many people are filling in forms or reading our white papers? And so you have to educate them that the goal is not a conversion. A goal at that stage is just simply getting them to the website and being able to retarget them down the road. But that takes a lot of patience and a lot of education on their side.
Yeah, it's really hard work. It really is. That the return on ad spend that they get when they first stand up that paid search program and start seeing the inbound leads flow. If you're expecting that kind of return on ad spend for net new brand awareness advertising, it's like you're ready to be really disappointed. And therefore, it kind of puts marketers in the position, as you mentioned, where the success that you're holding up as the reason why they should invest more is maybe not, but maybe the success that they're going to be getting from those other investments isn't going to be quite as robust or at least as quick. So it takes some dancing. I appreciate you kind of peeling back the texture of that a little bit. I think there's a lot of learning, and just for marketers that are find themselves in that position, just, you know, thinking about that and being mindful of the mind shift that you're trying to create in the leadership.
Yeah, and I think one of the ways that we're looking at it, you know, we haven't started this program yet. We're still in the kind of strategizing phase. But one of the ways we'll be looking at it is, one, we're going to be selling programs, which, as I mentioned, are sort of multi-year, bigger contracts with our customers. So as a business, you know, that's still a fairly new concept. We don't have many of those deals. So that's exciting for leadership because they're trying to get the groundwork rolling. And two, it's those new markets, you know, rather than have them having to hire a whole sales team in a new market, which is what they would have done 5 years ago, I can say, well, let's do some experimenting. You know, let's focus on certain markets and see what messaging works for them, see what interests them. And then if, you know, there's interest there, then we can look at doing a bigger rollout. So it's trying to understand what their goals are and giving them, you know, a win that might not be monetary, it might not be dollar-based, but it's something strategic that's going to help them, you know, with the way that they're thinking about marketing as being a strategic function. And actually, this is one of the challenges that a lot of marketers have. If they're in a sales-led organization, results for leadership is always dollar-based. How many deals did you have? How many dollars did that drive? You know, what's our revenue? Marketing is a lot more strategic than that. You know, there's a lot of metrics that aren't necessarily directly related to dollars in the immediate time. So it's how do you train them to think more strategically with their focus and with what their expecting in terms of returns are.
I like the notion of looking at some of those metrics that, you know, in a lot of organizations, you know, more people following you on LinkedIn and you know, things that are more sort of, you know, engagement style metrics as opposed to monetary or revenue or pipeline metrics. You know, we might poo-poo those a little bit, but if you're doing them as an experiment to see if you can enter a new market or a new area or something like that in order to boost awareness, you know, it's not a bad thing to be able to provide that as well as the harder metrics of things that actually drove revenue, you know.
Well, I think, Jeff, what you're kind of saying there is like we kind of can look at them as vanity metrics in some way, but I think that's because sometimes what marketers do to drive them. You know, so you go and buy a bunch of fake followers to drive your vanity metrics. Well, you know, that doesn't help anybody. But so I think it starts from what are you doing to try to move that needle? It's not that the needle itself that's broke. It's,
no,
you know, how you try to move that needle makes the needle useless. Does that make sense?
Also, like if you consider how you're explaining that to people who may not necessarily understand why a follow, you know, is good or bad or useful or directionally an improvement, you know, I think there's a lot of education required there in order to explain how you're attacking this to the C-suite and to others in the organization who may not have experienced any of this kind of thing before.
And I think it always has to be linked back to the overall company goal, right? If your audience isn't on LinkedIn, then growing your LinkedIn audience absolutely would be a vanity metric. You know, there's no use in that. If you're solely based in the US and you get a bunch of people from Mexico coming to your website, that's a vanity metric. That's not helpful. So it has to be linked to what the business is doing. And if you can see that leadership is trying to shift or they've got a certain strategy that they're trying to go in, and you can say, hey, this is my plan to support you from that through marketing. It's going to take time. It's going to take, you know, but these are the stepping stones to get there. Then I think it's easier for leadership to understand and kind of get on board with that slightly longer journey that you have to go on.
Tom, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've really enjoyed this. You're the type of person that I think is looking ahead a bit. And so I wonder what you, as you look, maybe, because I mean, the world of marketing is changing pretty quickly now, and I know that's cliche to even say, but it seems like it's changing faster than it had been for a little while. We kind of reached a bit of, you know, almost stagnant for, you know, I think we're a little bit predictable for a while, and now I think they're getting less predictable again. As you look at 3 years out or so, I wonder what you'd say is, what's something that you're doing today that you probably won't be doing then? Or something you're not doing today that you probably will be doing then?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think email campaigns I can see those going away. And the reason being is because I think a lot more people will be using AI agents to manage their inboxes. And AI agents are just going to read out marketing emails. So you're going to have to find a different way of reaching people. You know, when you're collecting information for through forms and stuff, at the moment, you collect their email and then you put them on a mailing list or you reach out to them when you've got something to say. I think that's going to go away as AI agents become more popular with the general population looking after their inboxes.
Wow, that's fascinating. I would not have predicted that that was going to be your response. of all of the marketing kind of, you know, new things that have come along, it's you know, email marketing has had some remarkable staying power.
Check in and see how this is going.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about some campaign metrics I was looking at just earlier this week, and the differences between an email campaign send versus an SMS send. And, you know, the email was still outperforming SMS in that instance.
Yeah. I think it will take time. It's, you know, when you've got products like Superhuman and Fixer that go in and do your inbox for you, and you just have to fortify the AIs picked out to, you know, as more people start using those, I think, you know, I mean, we're still using email campaigns pretty heavily, but I do think that is going to be the type of AI that really takes off, you know, across the population, not just in marketing. And that's going to impact how well your email campaigns are working.
Yeah, that makes sense, Tom. You've certainly given me something to think about there. And I think you've given our listeners something to think about. I really want to thank you for joining us on the show today. It's been wonderful to have you on the.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. It's been a really fun conversation.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks, guys.